Good morning, welcome. It is Tuesday. It's Tuesday, the 26th of May. Hopefully everyone had a lovely weekend. If you were lucky enough to have the day off yesterday or any time off this weekend, hopefully you enjoyed it. It was beautiful weather for the most part, so we are into the summer season, so hopefully everyone got a little taste of it this past weekend. So we come back roaring to life, and we have a great panel this morning, and we also have some really interesting topics to talk about. So we introduce those to you in just a moment. In the meantime, we invite you to join us roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we can get into all kinds of good stuff. Before we do that, though, let me introduce our panel to you. We have Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir.
I was in the garden all weekend long pulling up weeds, okay?
All right.
Now, you know how when you ride down the lot...
And what kind of weeds would those be?
Every kind.
Okay.
You know, not poison ivy, but you know when you're riding down the road and you take a trip, and all you see when you lie down at night is the lines coming up at you because you've been driving
all day, right?
Yeah. I swear to you, I went to bed last night, and all I could see are those dandelion pods and stuff like that, and just reaching down for them. Don't you know? Isn't that an interesting story?
It is an interesting story. Yeah. And it also tells us a little bit about...
Me.
Well, I was going to, yes, that's true, but also about the time where we were sort of talking about the great things of summer and the weather and so forth. But yes, that's something that summer brings is constant weeding and being in the garden and all that good stuff.
Yep.
So, all right.
Yep. That's my report.
Let us move on. Mike
and
Spain,
you're sticking to it.
That's right. Mike Spain is with us as well. We're always very, very pleased when Mike can join us, associate editor of the Times Union. Good morning, Mike.
Happy to be here. Isn't Dreams of Dandelions a great title for a novel?
It is. Yes. It is. Very nice. It sounds like a Southern novel, but it's,
yes,
it's very, very nice. And our good friend, political advisor, consultant. What the hell?
Who is that?
You?
I don't know.
And
sometimes a lobbyist.
Sometimes a lobbyist.
Sometimes a lobbyist. Sometimes.
Yeah, when it comes to
animals.
Woofs.
Right. Dogs and cats. Puppies
living
and
together.
Right. In
mass
sin.
Hysteria.
Right.
Libby Post. Libby Post. Filling in for Rosemary Armeo. I got a note from Rosemary. So here's the problem, and I don't know that Rosemary.
People think we fire her.
That's right. I was just going to say that. People think that she goes and that
she goes on vacation a lot.
Yeah.
She's not easy because what happens is the night before Joel get a thing saying, oh, by the way, I'm not going to be there next week.
And then I get this frantic email. Can you come in? Can you come in?
Yeah.
And I wasn't planning on it, but here I am.
But you're a good person.
Did you bring your opinion with you?
I always. It just follows me wherever I go.
I do have to, just quick shout out to both Mike and to Libby, who are my go-to people. And whenever I ask,
night email
they
readers.
Say yes. So I'm very, very
they're
pleased.
Great people. They are great people.
They're wonderful, wonderful people. So let's get on to the topics at hand. We've got a lot to talk about and all kinds of cool things and not so cool things to talk about. Let us begin with this suit in Cleveland and the fact that this was came out over the weekend, and there's some question about that. We can talk about that as well. Cleveland has reached a settlement with the Justice Department over what federal authorities said was a pattern of unconstitutional policing and excessive use of force, people briefed on the case said Monday. The settlement, which could be announced as early as today, comes days after a judge declared a Cleveland police officer not guilty of manslaughter in the fatal shooting of a car's two unarmed occupants, both of them black. The verdict prompted a day and night of protest and reignited discussions about how police officers treat the city's African-American residents. The details of the settlement were not immediately clear, but in similar talks in recent years, the Justice Department had required cities to allow independent monitors to oversee changes in police departments. Settlements are typically backed by court orders and often call for improved training and revised policies for use of force.
You know, Joe, what's so fascinating about this is that there are we have federalism. It means we have state government and we have federal government. But that when it comes to cleaning up the legislature, it's the feds who do the dirty work because the state people are too intertwined with each other. We saw how Andrew Cuomo, otherwise known around here as Andrew, you know, got rid of the Moreland Act Commission. Why? Because he didn't want to offend Shelley, was the what we were hearing. I sometimes thought maybe he didn't want to offend himself. But whatever happened, you know, that it's the federal level that does it. So that's what's happening here now. We have always asked for civilian complaint review boards, right? We get them from New York City. We get them, I think it is one in Albany, mm-hmm. right?
It's an advisory board.
Yeah. But
not that much
but
power.
Then basically, you don't hear from them again a lot. So therefore, it's up to the feds. And what the feds are going to do here in this agreement, which they have done in other places, is they put a monitor in place. And the federal monitor now has some teeth. And that's the way it goes. And so I'm just saying that it is federalism that makes the change.
Well, it's the timing that makes this particular story interesting, because it comes just as there was I guess in many people's opinion, an unfavorable verdict regarding a police officer that had been charged with manslaughter in the death of a couple, an African-American couple, who he was on trial in this shooting where other police officers fired onto this car. They suspected these people of wrongdoing. And after the trial, which was not a jury trial, it was conducted by a judge, he acquitted the officer and said that essentially he was acting in a lawful way. A terrible tragedy happened, but he was acting, and there were protests.
Yeah, I don't know how standing on a car's hood and firing in through a windshield on two unarmed people is acting lawfully.
It's hard for me to wrap my head around that. What people were protesting over the weekend, and yet this announcement comes out over a holiday weekend, or this disclosure that the Justice Department has entered into an agreement with the Cleveland Police to basically oversee it. And, you know, these have been in other cities. They've been in Seattle, Newark, of course, Ferguson, Missouri, mm-hmm. and now Baltimore will be under oversight. It's a pattern where, I think, as you say, where the state governments have not handled this right, local governments have not handled it right. So the Justice Department steps in this case, as they stepped into the New York political corruption case, to try and change this. And
let me take the con on this just for a moment and react to what Libby just said. You know, it is true that it sounds horrible. The guy stood on the hood, but of course there's the question of you know, what was going on at the time that none of us will really know completely. Right? We won't.
There were 137 shots fired. Yeah.
Right.
This guy fired 15.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, I don't like it. I don't like driving while black, walking while black. You know, this is terrible
stuff.
Getting
shot while black.
This is terrible stuff. But if you're a police officer, you are under tremendous pressure. Now, it's interesting because in New York City now, which has had its own issues on all of this, we now see the murder rate steadily rising. And there is an introduction of police reform and other things that Mayor de Blasio is bringing. So sometime there are unsavory characters who will take advantage of the fact that you're doing it differently and that you're going to make it more difficult for the police to do their jobs. For those who are listening now, I am not for killing anybody who is unarmed. It's ridiculous. It's terrible. Nevertheless, I'm not there. I'm not the cop. And I don't know what's in the mind of the evildoers who would murder somebody else. The murder rate in New York City mm-hmm. is going up.
Directly related to stopping.
I think
the stop and frisk.
It may be. It may be.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a conflict weighing an individual's civil rights, constitutional rights, against the greater good. And it many felt that the stop and frisk policy that Mayor Bloomberg had continued when he was mayor, while it did stop and catch some criminals before they were able to act, it was a broad application and basically unfair, and it targeted minorities.
No question about it. There's no question about it.
So these are the balances, and when it shifts one way, it has repercussions, and when it shifts the other way, it has repercussions.
Look, if we're walking down the street, all you have to do to understand this is to say, okay, if your complexion is a different shade, you're going to get stopped. Your chances of getting stopped, and it's all based on skin pigment, mm-hmm. and nothing is more unfair than that. If you're it.
Let's take a break, actually, and we'll come back and discuss this and get to some letters and some other topics as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. Saratoga Chamber Players, bringing musicians together from Europe, Asia, Canada, and the U.S. since 1987, with a concert June 14th at 3 p.m. at the United Methodist Church. SaratogaChamberPlayers.org. Adirondack Scenic Railroad, a heritage train with tours leaving from Utica's Union Station, Thendera Station, Saranac Lake Union Depot, and Lake Placid. AdirondackRR.com for schedules and information. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted, dairy, and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning, the 26th of May. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Shartok, Mike Spain, Libby Post, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. We have a few that we want to get to before we go to a news break at the bottom of the hour. Alan?
Well, I'm using my new Surface Edge computer, and I really don't know how to operate it very well.
So you're a little on edge.
No, I just lost a very good letter, or a provocative letter anyway, that said maybe the reason that the murder rate is going up in New York City is that the cops are trying to show up de Blasio for being too liberal. That was what it was. I'm sorry,
yes,
I can't read.
It's from Gene, and it says, a silent work slowdown, ?
Yeah. I think that's what it said.
Yes.
You have it on yours still?
Yeah.
But I eliminated it on mine
by
touching the wrong thing.
So maybe the murder rate is going up in New York City because the police aren't working as hard in an effort to make de Blasio and his policies look bad.
Right. Right. That's right. That's what it was, indeed. And then John says, is the murder rate going up in New York City because the police can't use extreme force, or is it going up because the police aren't enforcing in certain situations in a silent protest of coming under new oversight? So that's two, basically.
Well, it could be the third, and that is the perception by the public that the police have slacked off, whether they have or haven't, and that fuels, at least motivates the bad guys, the evildoers, to emboldens them to be more aggressive, and that's where you get the crime.
Well, you know, there was this whole thing about turnstile jumping, remember that, and broken windows, and Giuliani said, we're going to take those people, you'll remember, and we are going to treat them and find that, and everything went down. Everybody knew that things now were going to be a lot rougher. I have a feeling Mussolini and others might have done
something
the same.
Something similar.
But nevertheless, the number one, I've said it before, I say it again, the number one issue in New York City, as a longtime resident and as somebody who knows a lot of people, is people want to feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And in the early 1980s, New York City was a scary place. people were frightened. And now we have a city that it's vibrant. People are everywhere, all hours of the day. You can be in Manhattan, you know, 11:30 at night and not feel unsafe.
42nd Street is turned into Disneyland.
Literally.
Yeah.
and W says, Alan, if you are correct about the rising murder rate in New York City, I am. A possible factor you haven't mentioned is the PBA's anti-de Blasio attitude. And in fact, you're exactly right, W, and different W. You're exactly right, W, because we know that after there was this tremendous confrontation between the PBA and the mayor, and you know what happened, which was that they stopped writing tickets. Now, there could be some left over here. I don't know.
But it doesn't, you know, to do that kind of slowdown, it doesn't do them any good because it ultimately will make the police look bad because the city won't be safe. So it's really... It's sort of, I understand why they may be doing this, but ultimately it's not going to reflect well on them.
Mm-hmm. Joe, did we read John's letter who said, is the murder rate going up in New York City?
Yes.
Yeah, we did. Okay, I thought it sounded familiar. Roger said, quid custodiet, where arguably you have a highly politicized Justice Department who is the ultimate arbiter, iOS it the ballot box. Roger. All right.
I think he speaks to the question in both the cases of the police departments being under the Justice Department plan and then U.S. attorneys stepping in when local governments and state governments have failed to police political corruption. When you have that happening, it does raise the question, is it shifting too heavily to the federal government to be the arbiter in all of these, and is that an appropriate level? I mean, some would object to that, saying
sure.
That's too much.
That's right. Michael says, or could it possibly be that criminals are taking advantage of the fact that they know they won't be stopped? There is always that. And I think I mentioned it before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jeff says, to insinuate the police would allow civilians to die for some conspiracy or hurt the mayor is absurd and offensive, says Jeff.
All right.
Well, we hope Jeff's right.
All right. Let's take a break, and we're going to hear from BBC, and we will give you an opportunity to write a note to us as well. We have many other topics to discuss. We'll get to those in just a second. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Libby Post. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. roundtable@wamc.org. We've been talking a little bit about state government in New York State this morning, so let's go to a poll that was just released this morning from Siena College, Siena Research Institute, finding in a new poll that Governor Andrew Cuomo currently commands the lowest favorability rating since entering office. Mike.
Well, Steve Greenberg, a spokesman for Siena, points out that it is still a majority of people, a small majority, but a majority of people polled in New York State do find the governor favorably. And that number is down considerably from, you know, early in his first term when it was up around 70. Right now his favorability rating is 53 say he's favorable, 44% are saying that he's unfavorable. Similar numbers for his job performance. And I can turn to the political scientist here and ask, second term of a governor, about a year into the second term, a little more, isn't this kind of normal?
You are so right. That's exactly what it's all about. The first term, everybody has high hopes. They infuse, they project into the candidate, you know, good feelings. And then when things sort of stay the same, I think if you look at the governor, the Republican governor of Massachusetts is doing rather well in his first term. And I think what happens is by the time you get to that crucial third election, and that's got everybody...
Will he even run, right?
And that's
right.
That's right. That's got everybody talking. Well, you know, if you're the Mario Cuomo and you decide, well, you know, I can't be president, and I like living in the mansion, so I'll run one more time. Eagle Eye, Alphonse D'Amato, called me on the phone. I never get the day. He says, I know that you feel strongly about Mario, my friend. I just want you to know. I just want you to know we're going after him. We're going to take him out. And they did.
That was an excellent D'Amato.
They knew what they were doing. They saw the vulnerability in the polls, and they did it. Now, there's a lot of talk in Albany about whether or not Cuomo, based on these declining numbers, will run a third time. And the answer is, it sort of depends. And where else would he go? Assuming Hillary wins, there might be a place in the cabinet. But what place? He's not going back to HUD, right. That's for sure. That would be a demotion. He's not going to be Secretary of State, even though he did go to a couple of foreign trips lately. I don't see, I think the incentive would be for him to go, to run. Now, I interviewed the Chairman Ed Cox of the Republican Party this last week on the Capitol Connection, and he said he's going to run for a third term. That's it.
Well, I think they have to plan. They have to be making their plans now, anticipating that Andrew Cuomo will seek a third term, especially where else would he go? And he's still a young man politically, when you think about it. And he probably will cite unfinished business and want to.
They always say that, unfinished business. Or if they're leaving, they say, I want to spend more time with my family. Either way.
And pursue other interests.
Yeah. Anything that might come along. And while we're on the subject, Joe, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
On Thursday, George Pataki will apparently.
Well, I was about to bring that up.
Announce his run for another third term winner. He won three terms. Mm-hmm. His run for president of the United States. He says it's always been tough. And when I get there, we'll see what happens.
Did Alphonse call you?
No.
No.
Well, Alphonse D'Amato was behind Pataki.
That's right.
And bringing him up. And
mm-hmm. and Zenya Muka, remember her?
Mm-hmm.
That was his offensive weapon.
God.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. A lot of unanswered questions about George Pataki's throwing his hat in the ring. He's what, going to be one of, well, he's one of maybe 16 that are out there. Several of them have declared. A few more are planning to declare. And then there's others who are on the fence.
He'll be the moderate Republican that could be an anchor for the VP for a otherwise crazy ticket.
That's really interesting.
I've thought that from the beginning.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I thought he might be running for vice president.
Yeah, I think that's what
or,
this is.
Or if he gets some traction before he gets blown away by this crazy primary. Somebody like a New York Democrat, a New York Republican, I'm sorry, is like a Democrat to everybody else in the country.
Right. It's from
and a Rockefeller type Republican will not fare well in this Republican primary system. However, if he gets notoriety, gets a lot of face time, he could campaign. If he picks the right person who does get the nomination and starts campaigning for them and supporting them, not only vice president, there might be cabinet positions. He might be head of the Federal Reserve Bank. There's all kinds of benefits to him that can come.
Worst of all, I might make him head of NPR.
Oh my God.
I think Michael Oreskes has got that job.
He does, doesn't he? You'll all remember that.
Yes, he tried cutting.
Yes, he did.
Well, what's also interesting in this whole thing is there was a Post story about some right-wing foundation think tank type who are doing polling on Long Island, going after what they consider to be the liberal Republicans of Long Island, that they're not conservative enough and that they're going to try to take them out in the primaries next year.
Take who out?
The, like, Campanin.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
All those guys.
I mean, if those are what those people do, they will kill themselves. That's not good.
That's right.
For themselves. Now, I'm thinking that this primary process is really pretty unruly, that this is... this is really the traditional Democratic circular firing squad.
Yeah.
Who's
getting in this week? Pataki
but it's
and
turned
Rick Perry.
Into the GOP firing squad. They really are doing it to themselves.
My point,
right.
Yep.
And the Republicans wanted to avoid this. They really wanted to avoid this. The expectation was that Jeb Bush would indicate that he's interested and they'd all step aside and let him do it. And he's getting beat up. I really don't know.
I mean, originally
really
Chris
do.
Christie, then
that's
Jeb
right,
Bush.
Chris Christie, right. And he's still potentially interested.
We have a wonderful person who lives in our neighborhood. She was over at the house this weekend and she comes from New Jersey. You know what she said? It was great. She said, I really liked him. Mm-hmm. I thought he was forceful, Chris Christie. I thought he said what was on his mind. And she said, I really admired him. And she said, and I almost voted for him.
Almost.
Almost.
Almost. Almost. Almost. Only good in horseshoes and hand grenades, so.
I'm just wondering if Mitt Romney is sitting there just waiting for the explosion to happen and come in on a white horse.
But it's interesting because I read somewhere this weekend that the whoever does the debates has said for the Republicans on the primary that they're going to let the top 10 in. Okay? In other words, you have to poll in the top 10 to get in the debates. And George Pataki is nowhere near the top 10 at this stage.
Well, right now, how many are declared? I mean, if no others declare, technically he'll be in the top 10 on Thursday.
I see.
It's just another version of the clown car.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Before we leave politics and first and second bananas, let us talk about Kathy Hochul.
Yeah, Matt Hamilton, our reporter Matt Hamilton, has a profile of Kathy Hochul, the lieutenant governor. She's now, I guess, 5 months into her being lieutenant governor. And
who?
Kathy, that's a good question. Kathy Hochul. How many people could have named the previous lieutenant governor during the first term for
Stan
Governor
Stan Lundin?
Pataki?
Remember Stan Lundin back in the day?
Right. Well, it is often a dead end for politics, but it can also be when lightning strikes, you know, and the right things can happen.
Look what happened to David Patterson.
Kathy Hochul, who was a Buffalo, one-term Buffalo area congresswoman.
Who lost.
Who did lose. Right. It was a heavily Republican district. She won in a special election two years later. She lost to a very popular Erie County executive who remains in that seat right now. But she proved herself to be a good campaigner. She's now stumping for the governor. She's the voice for a lot of his policies, economic development, and the effort to tighten sexual abuse rules, and enforcement on college campuses. And she's traveling all over the place, you know, and he enumerates the various places she goes and how her day starts early and ends very late. And that's going to have to pay for her politically. She's going to get her name out there. She speaks well. She defends the governor very well and his policies. She articulates it very well. I think the sense is that, you know, she's a player in New York politics. And depending on what happens for that third term, you know, she could be in an awfully good position.
Really?
Or even before
what do you think, Alan? What do you think?
I predict she will not be in a good position.
Okay. How many lieutenant governors in recent years have become governors? We had
one.
Malcolm Wilson became a governor because
about recent years.
In recent years, one. Going
well,
back to the 70s.
Well, no, Patterson.
Patterson
by
one.
Default. Yeah,
by default.
Rocky left on his own.
And I love Elliot Spitzer. Don't get me wrong, but yeah. I think he appointed Patterson. That he was
with no expectation that he would,
and a fairly weak sister for, you know, the possibility of taking over.
And gee, now he's the chair of the Democratic Party in the state of New York.
Yeah,
I like David personally.
Me too. He's been here many times.
He's a very nice man, and he's smart. But
so the odds are that if you look at the last 35, 40 years, two have risen to become governors, and that's only when the governors that they were lieutenant governors for have left office,
right?
And neither of them was able to run for a term after that. Right. So the odds are against Kathy Hochul becoming governor, but she seems to be gaining a lot of popularity.
She's not going to be governor.
All right, let's just end it there. She's not going to be governor.
That's all there is.
And we'll be back with more and your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Honest Weight Food Co-op, 100 Water Valete Ave, Albany, New York, specializing in local and organic produce, natural groceries, fine cheeses, locally raised meats, and ready-to-go organic meals. Honestweight.coop. Safe Harbors of the Hudson, Newburgh, presenting an evening of music and dance with the Hudson Valley Latin Band Cuba Riqua in the lobby at the Ritz Theater, Saturday, June 13th at 7:30 p.m., safe-harbors.org. SUNY Ulster Stone Ridge, presenting the Own It Entrepreneurial Women's Conference, a day of workshops providing advice for growing a business, June 4th, sunyulster.edu/ownit. And Albany Marriott, with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation. Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Let's see. We've got Alan and Mike and Libby, and we welcome your comments roundtable at wamc.org. And so, Libby.
Mm. Yes.
What do you think of Ireland?
It's great. Irish eyes were smiling, and they will continue to smile. I mean, first of all, it was a vote. A popular vote,
yeah.
Over 60% was, they could have raised the tax cap while they were
in
it.
In case someone missed like this over the holiday. Yeah, right. So in case someone missed this over the weekend.
Ireland voted the first to nation allow same-sex marriage.
To approve same-sex marriage by popular vote.
And here was a country that was so run and tightly controlled by the church, and the generational changes that have happened there. And, the church was part of the problem with all the abuse scandals and everything, but the generational changes that have happened there, 63%. It means a lot. Almost all the counties or all the localities except one voted yes. It's just a great reason to celebrate, but a great step forward for all of Europe as well as the world because, the people voted. We have to wait for judicial decisions to come down.
And what's so interesting is how many of the older people voted for.
That's right.
As well as the
younger
crowd
cohort.
Who in this country have been leading the way.
Right. I saw the prime minister or the president. He's from a conservative party over there. He was voting for it, because it was the right thing to do. It's just the right thing to do.
There were so many, I thought this was, it's a small number, obviously, but I thought anecdotally it was an interesting story. But I talked to a friend who is Irish and lives in Ireland, has a home in Ireland, lives here, and said that people who could still vote were traveling over specifically to vote yes. So that was making a large contingent to go over and to vote to vote yes. And, two things. One is that I think if you told the average Irish citizen or even the average citizen, Catholic citizen of any country, 10 years ago, would this, they would have laughed you off.
And there was some horrific hate crimes against lesbian and gay people in Ireland.
It was only a few years ago that homosexuality was
illegal.
The illegality was lifted. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we're not too far. This isn't too far after divorce being legal.
That's right.
And
how about contraceptives?
Right.
And
birth control. The church controlled the government there for a very long time.
The Constitution was written largely by
the Archbishop or whatever.
The person who became Archbishop back in the 30s.
Martin, yeah. I think.
Yeah. And you also wonder if, not wonder, but I mean, it seems fairly clear that. Pope Francis's input in some of this, while staying out of the direct fray, certainly his statements have helped bolster the case in the largely Catholic country.
But even though in Ireland and I think elsewhere, people of all ages support the rights of gays and lesbians to marry. It's the youth. I think it's generational. I think that in Ireland, you've got to think that these young people have seen the abuses, the clergy abuse scandal in Ireland all exposed in the last decade or a little more than that, and that tempers how they think about the authority of the church. So they're not bound by church philosophy and church rules in how they look at society, and this demonstrates it. And I think those kinds of changes. Recently, polls have shown in the United States that when you poll Americans, you get a certain percentage, and then you poll just Catholics, and they're pretty much the same on the moral issues of gay marriage, of birth control, of whether someone can have an abortion legally. They're roughly the same percentages as the rest of America.
Well, the recent polls here showed over 50% of the country supports marriage equality. I think we're at like 39 states at this point, give or take a few, with all the decisions that are coming down. I think this whole thing is going to be decided on the last day of the Supreme Court session in June. and we will see marriage equality across the land, because what difference does it make? really and truly.
Well, and I think you were hitting on something else, Joe, too, the Francis effect, as it's called. And that's when the Pope said, famously a couple of years ago to a reporter when they asked him about the church's policy and the ban on saying homosexuality is a sin, he said, well, who am I to judge?
Yeah.
And that raised the question about, well, maybe this isn't the right policy and we ought to look.
But he's also said that this is a sin. I mean, he's
has he said expressly that homosexuality is
no,
a sin?
No, marriage. Gay marriage.
Gay marriage.
That gay marriage is not the right way to go. And I think,
Are you sure he said sin? He used the word sin.
He said it was not in line with church teachings.
Well, that's
and
different.
There is a fine.
And shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, fine.
The church ban on gay marriage is in place.
Right.
Well, one
right.
line, you're right up in hell. So
right, yeah,
you're
right.
Clear
so,
this up pretty
you know,
quickly.
I know it's venal.
By the way, there's a huge, anti-clericalism is not only in Irish countries, Catholic countries like Ireland.
Sure.
It's long existed in Italy, of all places. So that there's a big difference. People don't like to get pushed around.
They don't like
want
the church,
their freedom.
Their
yeah.
church telling whatever their right. church is telling mm-hmm. them what to do.
So let me ask you this question because I saw this over the weekend in my Facebook feed, mm-hmm. which was a great outpouring of people saying supporting Ireland and the decision. And one person wrote something that I thought was interesting that said, "This is great. I just hope we reach a time where people don't have to vote for civil rights."
Oh, well, that would be a lovely thing. You know, it would be great.
But fundamental to this was recognizing that marriage equality was a civil right. It wasn't regarded as one, and at least now it's established
now
that
it's
it is.
People shouldn't be voting on civil rights because in this country, if they voted on civil rights, we wouldn't have any. It came
scary.
Down to the courts to make the right decision about
well,
civil rights.
Well, I agree with you, Libby. I agree with the writer and with you. I'm not so sure that some of the, so-called Bible Belt would vote,
No, but when the Supreme
rights.
Court rules in June, likely that they will likely rule that marriage equality is a civil right. That's what they will establish.
Well, I can
the law
hope so,
land.
But I'm a Murphyist.
Yeah.
I like Murphy's Law.
Yeah.
Yes. Speaking of Ireland.
Right.
Yeah, Murphy's Law.
By the way,
the
Rainbow Irish Shamrock is very cool logo. I think was very well done. Did you say that? Very, very well done.
The Rainbow Shamrock?
Yeah, the Rainbow Shamrock.
And supposedly there was a rainbow over someplace in
there's
Ireland.
Always a rainbow over someplace in Ireland.
Oh, is that it?
And there's a pot of gold at the end and a little green leprechaun. Don't you know that?
He's your first cousin.
Wow. Thank you, Mike. Let's bring in Megan Finnegan to give us a lockbox update. We have exciting news, all very good news, and with all good news,
not that good if you don't mind my saying
that's
so.
That's right. There's always more
not
to
that
go.
Good.
Right. Okay. So let us go and get a total. We had a weekend, a holiday weekend. We needed everybody to come out and do something. So where are we at?
Right now, Joe, we are at $302,657.
Say again, one more time.
$302,657.
So and we need to get to.
We need $72,343 more dollars to make our goal.
See, it's not so easy.
$375.
And when does this have to be done by?
It has to be done by Monday morning.
It's 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. I'm scared to death, to be honest with you.
Which is when the fund drive begins, 6 a.m. next Monday, June 1st. And we need to get to 375. And why is that important? Explain to people. Because of the challenge.
Oh, yeah. We have $17,500 on the table. $10,000 of it is from Mr. Big.
Yes.
And $7,500 of it is from the First Niagara Bank. Some guy keeps writing me and saying, you said that the First Niagara Bank is both of them. No, Mr. No. Big is a very
They're
special
separate.
Person around here. Stop writing me those letters.
A personal plea. So we have some time to go. We have just under a week, 6 days, right?
Yep, we got to make about $12,000 a day.
Okay. So everybody's got to do something.
We're
it's the lockbox. By the way,
all right,
it's the lockbox.
Lynn said to me over the weekend, we have to do it.
All right.
I should say.
So
well, a lot of people like to get in on it at the end.
The lockbox is open. We need your help desperately, trying to get to 375 before. And by the way, you know, we could end the thing now when we wouldn't even need a drive.
But it's the why. It's the why.
Yeah.
We're all in it together. We all made it together. We got to keep it. It's that simple. I want to say that one person wrote, Joe, if I may, very quickly and tell you that that she was annoyed with me. Dear Alan, we dandelions are great for the soil. We give nutrients and needed nitrogen. Please, please do not kill us. We love you and your garden. Dandelion.
I have a question about the lockbox effort. One of the reasons I've heard people say that they wait for the drive is they like to get some kind of reward.
Well, they get a reward. They get the thing.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of stuff that you could get. I mean, right now, one of the big items that people are choosing is the stainless steel water bottle.
I hold it in my hand. Look at that, Mike.
You can personalize
it. Yes.
But it doesn't look stainless steel. It looks, you know, sort of white enamel.
It's white, and it's got the WAMC logo on it.
And you get to put a couple of words on it.
So the answer is, even if you do it online, you can select
we've got T-shirts, we've got crank
radios. I'll bet that's why you asked, Mike, to incentivize people.
The drop-down menu, and you can still have your WAMC cap.
So you don't have to wait till the drive begins to get a little
No, but I think a lot of people love the fun drive itself.
Yeah. And we do have a lot of great stuff coming up.
Oh, we do.
Yep.
Excellent. All right. So WAMC.org will get you where you need to be to help out on the lockbox. WAMC.org. Megan, we'll talk to you tomorrow for an update. Thank you very much.
Thank
we appreciate all of that. Alan, thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
And Mike and Libby, thanks again for coming in. Always a pleasure. We'll be back tomorrow with more panel. We have more show right after this.